Welcome to Season 2 of the Unscripted Medicine Podcast, a podcast about living and learning at the UC College of Medicine.
On the show, we discuss everything from board exam prep, how to excel in your clinical clerkships, and also how to do the little things required to thrive in medical school.
Check out the show notes or our website for more information, helpful links, resources, and more.
Please connect with us via email or on Twitter. We would love to hear from you. Without further ado, we hope you enjoy today's episode.
Hello, and welcome back to the Unscripted Medicine Podcast. For those of you who do not know me, my name is Alex Gelati, and I'm a current M2 here at UCOM. And joined with me today is an OG, original podcast member and creator, M4, Kevin Milligan. This is going to be a special episode and a sad one. All of our M4s are leaving us, shedding a tear now. And so this kind of episode is just to reflect on their time here at the University of Cincinnati and, talk about highs and lows and things they'll miss and just reminisce about what it's like being a med student as they are soon to graduate and be full-fledged physicians. So
I'm excited to be here. Yeah, the first episode like this that we did was last year with Madison as she left the team. And I think it's a fun tradition now, so.
Yeah, it's definitely a great way for us newbies on the team to get some tips, not only about podcasting, but about medicine in general and being told we can survive and that you guys have done it. So,
absolutely.
Okay, so just to start off, what is one thing? I know on our podcast, we don't typically get really personal with our audience, but since this is something different, I wanted to start off with what is one thing that our audience should know about you before we start?
Well, I with COVID, it's been kind of different. I've had quite a bit of time. So I have gotten really deep into cycling, which is like a stereotypically doctor hobby, doctor and dentist hobby. So I'm just really fulfilling that stereotype. But it's really fun. I do it pretty much, 4 or 5 days a week. And also reading. I've started reading for fun instead of just for knowledge. So I read a lot of fiction and sci-fi and fantasy type stuff. So kind of like to do that as well. And, just like hang out with my wife and, watch movies and have coffee and normal human stuff.
It's a shock that you didn't go into emergency medicine. It's like a big running joke that they all like cycle into the ER.
And well, they cycle in, on their mountain bikes, and I do a road bike, so it wouldn't work.
Okay. So I heard you say wife, and I know you recently got married. So what's that like? Any other new life updates?
Yeah, so it's been a busy spring, to say the least. So in February, I got engaged, and March was the match. So I matched at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. So I'm super excited. Then we just decided to do a small backyard wedding. So we got married in April, actually. Very short engagement. But I think it was perfect. My wife is from Italy, and her family wasn't able to come. And so we didn't see it, the purpose in having this long protracted engagement if her family wouldn't be able to come anyways. And so we did a nice backyard wedding, and then we're going to plan a full-sized wedding in 2022 in Italy so that her family can be there. So that was huge. Married life is great. I highly recommend it. I know you are yourself married as well. So it's honestly, it's great. Absolutely no complaints so far. Probably still in the honeymoon phase, but everything is all as well. And then we are going to be moving to Houston in a couple of weeks. And then we will actually be doing a honeymoon to Hawaii for 12 days. So very excited for that. And then basically I like fly back from my honeymoon and immediately start like onboarding for residency. So it's a M4 is like a crazy year. Like you have a lot of downtime, but oh my gosh, so many life changes and interviewing and AIs, and it's crazy. It's nuts.
It sounds both a mixture of some great times and some stressful times. I'm definitely looking forward to it. Step studying and dedicated is just all lows.
Yeah. It's a really hard time to be an M2 right now. So I definitely appreciate you having time during your studying, your dedicated studying to do this interview. So
Of course. This is probably going to be one of my favorite interviews I've done. So have you gone to Italy yet to meet her family?
I have not. No, we met in September of 2019. And so probably there would have been one or two trips to Italy by now, if not for COVID. and so I've spent a lot of time on FaceTime with them, with my wife, thankfully translating because her parents don't speak any English. And her sister lives with her parents and her sister speaks English. So she's able to translate as well. But yeah, lots of FaceTime, lots of text messages and things like that. They're extremely nice and wonderful people. So I'm looking forward to meeting them as soon as possible.
Yeah. Well, I am super excited for you, and I'm sure all our listeners and the rest of the team are also super excited for all these life changes for you guys.
Well, you know, they say you should never get married, move to a new state, or start a new job. Like, you should only do one of those. and I did all three. And so it's been a busy year.
Well, kind of going back to, you know, why you even got into this, why you're about to start this new job and having to go through one of your life changes, which was the match. I just kind of want to go back and talk about like where it all started. Like, where did you decide you wanted to be a physician and go down this long road?
Well, I was born in 1992. No, I'm just kidding. So really the journey started when I was 12 years old. My dad was diagnosed with brain cancer, and subsequently he passed away about 6 months later. So he had, you know, very aggressive glioblastoma multiforme. And that was my kind of first exposure to like medicine and healthcare. And it kind of, you know, obviously was incredibly sad and tragic and, you know, changed my life forever. But kind of in going through that, I saw that, you know, being in healthcare, you have this opportunity to provide a service for somebody that I felt was like inherently valuable. It would be rewarding to help people who are sick. And so that started me down the journey of going to nursing school. And so I went to University of Cincinnati for undergrad, and I pursued a nursing degree there. And it wasn't until my junior year of nursing school when I was finally in the hospital full time, or you know, much more than in the first 2 years. And I really felt what it was like to, you know, be a nurse. And I also was able to closely observe doctors, and I had several doctors kind of not take me under their wing, but they would go out of their way to show me, you know, different clinical stuff and how to order tests and stuff like that. I worked at the urgent care at Cincinnati Children's and got a lot of close contact with physicians there. And so in that, I kind of fell in love with medicine. I started to think, wow, I really do need to apply to medical school. I think I would have been happy as a nurse, but I think I probably would have gone to work every day and worked in the interprofessional team and, you know, worked with doctors and kind of felt like, man, like I probably should have given that a shot. So after I graduated and got my nursing degree and my nursing license, I decided, full speed ahead, I'm going to try to apply to medical school. So Did a gap year to do my prereqs and take the MCAT, and then another gap year to apply to medical school, and then got into Cincinnati again, and here we are 4 years later. Honestly, it was like the best decision for me. I have absolutely no regrets about choosing to go to medical school. I think really it was perfect. I really think it was probably like the best decision I had ever made, up until the point of deciding to marry my wife, of course.
Just got to slide that in there. So
yeah. requisite shout out to my wife. So.
Well, that sounds awesome. I love that story. I love that you were an untraditional like student. I feel like so often, we talk about like the traditional pathway where people know, like, I was born and I knew I was going to be a doctor. And then
I was born with a scalpel in my hand. No,
exactly. I went straight from high school into med school. And it's just nice to hear that kind of progressive transition in like being immersed in medicine and then wanting more and then eventually getting it. And look at you now, you're graduating and you're going to start internal medicine. And
Yeah. Although I have to say, I mean, you know, kind of taking the path that I did, I think it helped because I had just a lot more clinical experience than I think a lot of folks do, just being in nursing school and having worked at Children's. But at the same time, I think it gave me a different perspective on imposter syndrome, because I felt like, oh my gosh, all my classmates are so smart and like they all just did the traditional route. And so, you know, I felt behind in terms of basic sciences, especially biochem and physics. And I mean, not that physics is relevant anymore, but I really felt, you know, my imposter syndrome came from the fact that I didn't take the traditional route, and that all of my classmates, I perceived that they had a big step up on me just because I took a different path. But you know, in the end, it works out. And I think many of us suffer from imposter syndrome at some point in time. So that was where mine came from.
Yeah, I definitely resonate with that. I also am an untraditional student and I was an EMT beforehand. Mm-hmm. So I felt very comfortable with patient interaction going in with school, but definitely did not feel with biochem or some of the more basic science that I was at par with my peers. So
yeah,
it definitely adds a layer to it. I'm kind of curious, because you have so many different factors and a different path to get where you got now. How has like your passion or perception of medicine changed in like your steps to getting to med school and now graduating?
I can remember when I first started med school, like I just remember feeling like, oh my God, this is so hard. And it is, it's unbelievably hard. And I remember just feeling like, wow, like anybody that has MD or DO behind their name, like massive respect, because holy crap, this sucks. I think, you know, we all are told that med school is hard, but it was like, oh my gosh, it is hard, sure enough. And so I think, you know, my perception of medicine, I've just grown to appreciate it even more. The training that we get is extremely extensive. And while that, you know, kind of makes us sad because we have to live as residents while we're in residency, it really is, it's the best way to get the training that you need to safely take care of patients. And so I really appreciate that medicine has that built in. Every step along the way, you know, you're within your proximal zone of development. And so it feels uncomfortable, but really you're ready for it. I think there's a really good system in medicine to facilitate that. And so honestly, it's made me really appreciate medical education as well. I never, ever thought I wanted to be a teacher or a professor. And now I'm like going into residency, like gung-ho about, you know, doing all of the teaching electives and teaching pathways and residents as teachers and I want to go into med ed now. And so that was something that completely changed. I've always seen myself as a clinician first, and I still do, but I think, you know, teaching medical students and residents, I want that to be a huge part of my practice as well.
I just have to say that both Rachel and I were discussing at one point at what a great mentor and teacher you are and how great of a teacher you would be. So it just makes me super happy that you're kind of into medical education, because I think
Thank you. You
definitely remind me of the way you teach and how you are like Dr. Kelleher. And you're just meant for it. It's kind of the
highest
fit.
That is the highest compliment one could give to compare me to Dr. Kelleher. So,
well, thank you. Because you're both super nice, super willing to help, and just very passionate. It's a perfect fit. That's the type of people we need.
So, a happy coincidence. My last week as a medical student on wards, I was with Dr. Kelleher. He was my attending, and it was just amazing. It was really fun.
So now I just kind of we talked about a general broad kind of how you've gotten to where you are and what some things that have changed, but I want to go back to M1 year. Just let's picture back 4 years, 4 years ago.
4 short years ago.
Yes. You're bright eye, bushy tail, Kevin walking into the doors of UCOM, and I want to reflect on what were your best memories from M1 year?
Wow. Just that excited energy of getting to campus and going through orientation and meeting your classmates. That was such a fun time. With that imposter syndrome that I kind of talked about, I really felt like I had to way overshoot the amount of effort that I was putting in. And so even for first responder, I was studying a ton because I felt oh my gosh, I'm behind and I've been out of school for over a year now. And so I really probably started too hard. And so I think once I was able to taper that back and do intramural sports with my classmates and have a little bit more of a social life, once I felt a little bit more comfortable with what the workload would be, you just kind of get into that rhythm. I think especially after the weekly exams stopped, that was super brutal. I don't really have any fond memories of that period of time. But yeah, once, the second semester starts and you feel like the medicine is a little bit more relevant and you feel like it's a little bit more manageable in terms of the work-life balance, that you kind of get into that groove, and that was really nice.
Yeah, definitely weekly exams are not, they're no one's friends. No one enjoys them.
No.
What are some things that you kind of miss about M1?
I miss the sense of community, because you're always seeing your classmates. At least, this was pre-COVID times. And so I would have a lot of, we'd have at least two or three mandatory things throughout the week that I would have to go to, clinical skills, learning community, all of the tests. We'd have everybody together. And so you felt like you were really a part of a big group of like-minded people who you get along with. And so that was really nice. You just feel like you're in really good company. I think what you'll find probably when you start clinicals is that you're going to be rotating with a much smaller group of people. I think there was 20 or 30 of us that were in the same pathway. And so I rotated with them, but otherwise you don't really see your classmates anymore. And especially as an M4, it's very segmented and you only see a couple people throughout the year. So that sense of community kind of goes away in large part. So yeah, as an M1, you're just you're working hard. You have a big group of friends. Everybody goes out and celebrates after the exams or whatever. So that was just, it was really fun.
Yeah. I definitely feel bad for the current M1s. COVID definitely robbed that experience for them. With my class, it's kind of a little weird because I do feel the same thing. Like I just kind of disconnected from my class a little bit because, well, especially now I'm dedicated, everyone's just bunkered down. But in a sense, COVID has also brought us together a little bit. Just looking out for one another and checking in on one another more so than like a just casual hi in the hallway. So,
right.
It's something to keep in mind going clinical years that I won't see my friends as often, especially I have opposite tract than them.
You have surgery first, so you probably won't see them like very much at all. And it's sad. I mean, you'll get to know different members of your classmate, you know, different members of your class because of that, but it's kind of sad. It's necessary. It's a necessary evil though.
Yeah. So we've kind of talked about the good and things you might have missed. Are there any things that you wish you could have done differently that like our M1 listeners can take and try to correct?
You know, at least for me, I kind of overshot the amount of effort required initially. And also, since I went to undergrad here, I already had a pretty large group of friends based in Cincinnati. And so I don't think that I took as much effort and time establishing a group of friends within the College of Medicine. There's certainly, you know, I certainly have friends in my class and good friends as well, but I don't feel like I ever established like that core group of, you know, ride or die friends within my class. My social network was more outside of the school and that was fine. But I think if I had to go back and do it again, I would be a little bit more intentional about trying to find that core group of folks that I could, you know, it ended up developing over time with really through the podcast. But at least the first couple years, I kind of felt a little bit like I had dropped the ball to some degree in terms of making that friend group.
Yeah. There's something different about having friends who are going through what you're going through that you can talk about where they kind of just, they get it. They understand. So that's definitely good advice. So any M1s or future M1s in our incoming class soon, don't put making friendships on the side for stress and trying to study. We all do it. Just you got to balance.
It's really, you know, as an M1, especially during like physician and society, that's the time to really get to know your friends and make those connections. It's, yeah, you have to do some studying and things like that, but probably the most important thing is the social network that you're developing. So
yeah, support systems are huge and not talked about enough for being able to get you through med school dedicated.
Absolutely.
So kind of jumping forward a year in M2, do you have any good memories, bad memories, things you wish you had done differently?
Well, I will politely ask any of the College of Medicine administrators to close their ears briefly while I talk about. So I took a controversial route here and I actually stopped. I had not been going to lecture even as an M1. I was watching them online and, you know, as an early M2, I kind of felt like, you know, watching lectures, even, you know, at 2x speed or whatever, it wasn't really working for me. That's not how I was optimally learning. And so starting M2, I actually stopped watching the lectures as well. I would not recommend that process for everybody. You have to be extremely disciplined in keeping up with the work. But for me, it worked. And so, you know, in not going to lecture or not watching lecture, I saved myself between 2 and 4 hours every single day, which for me was huge. It allowed me to have an amazing social life as an early M2. And then as a late M2, it provided me the time to do like pre-dedicated step 1 studying. And so just having that time felt amazing. I had my routine down. I felt like I knew how much work I needed to do to get the grade that I wanted to get. And I felt like I could do things outside of school that kind of refill the tanks of the, you know, the wellness tanks, so to speak. So honestly, the first semester of M2 was probably my happiest semester of the preclinical years. Things just seemed to be going well. Also, you know, you do blood cardio, which I'm, you know, an aspiring hemonc doctor. And so I found that to be interesting. Probably my like number two or three career choice would be cardiology as well. So, you know, the material is really relevant as an M2. You feel like you're learning things that you need to know for clinical practice, very, very much so. And so I don't know. I think M2 for me was a really great year. In terms of like downsides of M2, I'm one of those like weird, rare beasts who did not mind studying for step one. I know that's a
what?
If you all could see Alex's face right now, I don't know. I hit a stride and I had a really good routine and I felt like I just put my head down and I spent a ton of time during dedicated focusing on wellness and self-care, really like a minimum of 3 hours a day away from the computer, just like running, cooking, doing things that made me happy. And yeah, most people are like, oh my gosh, step one studying, it's the worst. I'll never do it again. I'm like this weird person where I'm like, that was like peak studying. It was so good. I loved it. Like step one itself, like that test day was horrible, but you know, like the process of being in dedicated, I think I really hit a good stride. And so, probably a very controversial take, but, yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't have that much bad to say about M2, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely M2 is the best year out of the two preclinical years, just because it's, you go to class or watch your supplemental videos, however you study, and you're just like, oh, this makes sense. This is applicable to both my clinical skills case and for step one and for being on the ward. So you just, it all comes together and you're like, okay, this is actual med school. So understand that. I need some of that not minding about dedicated. I mean, if you could just bottle that up and give that to me.
Well, I think the secret there is having adequate time away from it. I took a full day off every week of dedicated. I took lunch completely off, like from noon to one. I did not touch any study materials. And then really from like 4 to 6 or 4 to 7, the same thing. I would go on a run, listen to an audiobook, shower, cook a healthy dinner, and then come back to it after dinner for a little bit more studying. But like really finding that perfect balance of what you can tolerate long term, that's, you know, I believe that going into the test with a good mindset and not being fried, crispy, burnt out is a huge asset. And so I really tried to go in with as good of a headspace as I could.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely learned that I need to at least take care of myself physically, like with exercise and stuff, more so than I had been, like with multi-system and stuff, just because you kind of feel like jittery, like you can't sit down anymore. So I've just been going on like runs to relieve stress. So whatever I'll lose of my mental sanity, I'll gain in my physical,
exactly.
physical health.
Exactly.
So kind of starting an M2 year, we get to like set our track, or at least random, like select it and hope we get it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a nice transition into talking about M3 year. And so how did you like set up your rotations? Any advice about handling rotations since clinical year is so different?
Yeah, you know, I thought when I was in M2 that it was going to be like the world's most important thing to get the perfect order to my rotations. And I think, you know, I guess it is important, or can be, especially for some specialties. But I think by the end of M3, I kind of felt like, you know, I could have done these in really any rotation or any order, and it probably would have been fine. My theory was I started on peds because I had worked at Children's for over 2 years, and I felt really comfortable working with kids. And so I felt like that would be a really strong place for me to start. And also, I didn't really have any ambition to go into pediatrics. And so I felt like it was a good rotation to start on, but for both of those reasons. I wanted to have internal medicine somewhere in the middle, because I wanted to have the perfect balance of having some clinical experience and being competent as an M3, but not being like towards the end of M3 where I was kind of burnt out and taking shortcuts and, you know, picking up bad habits along the way. And so I think that worked. I think probably the best piece of advice that I would have for anybody, you know, scheduling their M3 year is, it's really nice to schedule it so that winter break is in between two of your more intense rotations. And so I before winter break, I had internal medicine. And then after winter break, I had surgery. And so you get that 2 week break of time away from, you know, some people had internal medicine and then had a weekend and then started surgery. So having that nice longer break between two intense rotations, I think is a really good move if you can do that. The end of my year was disrupted by COVID, and so I missed family, neuro, and psych. Honestly, I've spent a lot of my M4 year attempting to learn how to do a neuro exam or learn how to do a mental status exam because I just didn't get that solid clinical, experience in those rotations like some of my classmates did. So, I would say put what you want to do somewhere in the middle. And have winter break be a nice buffer between two hard rotations would be my overall recommendation.
Yeah, you mentioned COVID. So I kind of want to ask you, how was that like whole experience with COVID starting and you're like trying to learn, but can't really because you're not allowed in the clinics?
Yeah, it was wild at first. I was in family medicine like the week leading up to COVID really hitting the US and it was chaotic. I mean, people were calling the clinic like crazy to schedule for tests or, you know, worrying if they had it. It was a really, really scary time to be in primary care. It was really, the mood was very anxiety provoking. And then once everything shut down, you know, they were canceling all of the appointments and stuff. And then med students were pulled out, shortly thereafter. And I just remember feeling extremely anxious about what was going on. There was just so much unknown. And then also being pulled from the clinical setting, you felt like you had no opportunity to help, you know, in any meaningful way. And so there was a lot of time at home, just like everybody experienced. But I picked up kind of reading and cycling again just to kind of fill the time. But I think just... You know, I had just finished surgery. I did surgery in January and February. And so, honestly, it was really nice to have time off. I think it was a scary time, but it was also a period of time where we all had the time to reconnect with ourselves and reconnect with our hobbies. I think there were positives that came out of it. I felt like I was given, honestly, just like a lot of extra vacation time, which, was great. I feel like, you know, when I look back at that period of time now, it's just a big hazy cloud of like nothingness because it all just, every day was basically the same. But, I refound hobbies that I still love and was able to spend a ton of time with my girlfriend at that time, wife now. So we definitely, having gotten through the pandemic together, became much stronger in our relationship. So I think there was definitely silver linings in there.
Well, that's good to hear. I love to hear those silver linings and those things we could have learned or good things that came from like a stressful time for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
To keep on with this kind of line of transparency, do you mind sharing like your biggest flop in M3 year where you're like, oh no.
Let's see, biggest flop. I didn't pass out, but I almost passed out during an exploratory laparotomy when I was on trauma call. It just like the patient was like so sick that it was one of those situations where like the med student was standing very far away from the patient. Like sometimes you can get kind of closer if, you know, if they're going to have you be more involved, but this was like all hands on deck. Like all of the surgeons in the room were working hard. And so I was just kind of standing off to the side and my breath was kind of, you know, bouncing off my mask and hitting me back in the face. And it was very warm and I just kind of got the tunnel vision and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to pass out. And so I did not, you know, famously like pass out onto the patient's sterile field or anything. But, I came very, very close.
I've heard similar stories from a different member on our team about almost passing out. So it must be a rite of passage for most med students at least one time.
I think
you're hungry, you get hot, you're like, this is not okay.
Well, and then there's another moment. So it was when I was an OBGYN where I was on OB at the time, I think. Or I don't know. No, I was on gyn-onc, and it was a case where it was like a delivery, like a C-section, and then a hysterectomy because it was suspected to be like really bad placenta accreta, and that's like you learn about that as an M2, and you're like, oh, like okay, but that's a huge deal. Like that really scares people. And so really the gyn-onc team was involved because of the accreta, and then the maternal fetal medicine folks were involved as well. It's just like a really high risk delivery. And so there were so many people in the room that I ended up standing in the hallway. I think it's like what's the hallway like outside of the OR? It's like the surgical core or whatever, where all the supplies are. I was standing out there looking through the window. Oh my God. It was honestly not ideal. I felt not like I was not a useful member of the team that day. And was put in the hallway. And I understood why. There was literally like 30 doctors in there and everyone was freaking out. But that probably felt like the biggest flop at the time. I was like, wow, this is fun.
Oh, yeah. I definitely probably didn't help with imposter syndrome or feeling
no,
like
it did not.
A physician.
No,
like just
not.
Don't touch anything. Go stand in that corner.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Not only in the corner, beyond the corner, into, in fact, the hallway. So, yeah.
That's funny. I'm sure we'll all have stories like that. So
yeah.
While I'm laughing, I need to remember that it's going to happen to me at one
yes.
point, probably.
Yeah.
But I thought your advice at the beginning about admitting when, to backtrack a little bit, admitting when you're wrong, I think that's very valuable for listeners at any stage of your path in medicine. You can learn it now as M1s and stuff, so you don't, it's a good way to check your ego and also a great way to learn, because if you stumble through and you're not gonna maybe get the teaching that you would if you were like, I don't know, but we can try to work this together and you can help me out and teach me along
yeah.
the way.
Yeah, and that's something that Robbie talks a lot about on the podcast is, you know, it can be challenging to admit when you don't know something, but that shows the teachers that you're working with exactly where you are and helps them, you know, teach you. So, I've always been quick to say, I don't know if in fact I truly don't know.
Yeah. And the fact that it hasn't really hurt you is good news. Cause I think like med students, especially before you like get into the clinical realm, you think, oh, you just hear like horror stories. You think in your head, like, oh, if I don't know it and I admit I'm wrong, like I'm just going to fail the rotation. And clearly that's not the case. And well, clearly you'll match.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, to be honest, there's probably some attendings that it'll really piss off. I fortunately never had any of those. I can't say it will never make somebody mad, but I just always think that, you know, being honest with my knowledge and my ability is probably the best path forward. And it has been for me, so.
Yeah. And if they get mad, it's more on them than you.
That's right. That's how I feel.
You're there to learn. You're exactly. there to learn and exactly. tell them what you don't know. So yeah. if they get mad for you not knowing, it's like, I'm a med student. What do you expect?
Yeah.
I'm not a physician yet.
Exactly.
So kind of going on the topic where I was saying how there are like preconceived notions that I currently have as a preclinical student that you're kind of debunking for me. How did your perceptions of the clinical year kind of change once you got in it compared to when you were in M1 or M2?
I guess I didn't really have a well-formed sense of what the clinical years would be like. So I think, you know, once I started M3, I really felt like, you know, I was there and I was learning, but I was not contributing to the team. And that's true in some ways. The clinical care will be delivered with or without you. But over the course of the M3 year, I kind of learned that, you know, M3s can actually be a really vital part to the team. I did not feel that way as an early M3. but there are things you can do. For instance, medical students third and fourth year have a lot of time where they can do really deep chart digs. What you'll find is that there's a lot of chart lore. There will be things like, oh, this patient has coronary artery disease in their chart. But it's like, well, how do we know that? Have they ever had a cath? Have they ever had a stent? Have they ever had a CABG? Are they on dual antiplatelet therapies? A lot of this stuff is actually not that clear in some of our patients, especially if they get care at outside institutions, for instance, at the VA, where your ability to look at the records are kind of limited. It doesn't mean that the records aren't there, but it's just not readily apparent. And so as an M3 and an M4, you can really do an extensive chart dig. You have the time to do that, and that's really helpful to the team. You also have a lot of time to talk to patients' families. I'll spend like 30 or 40 minutes on the phone with patients' families sometimes. Residents honestly just don't have that much time. And so you can really contribute to the team in those two ways specifically. And then also, you know, you're learning a lot and you're asking a lot of good questions. And I guarantee the M4s and probably the interns and maybe even the senior residents are like, oh man, that's a really good question. I don't know. and when somebody tells you to look it up and do a presentation on it, that means that probably they don't know either. So you're asking these thought-provoking questions that are making the team think and making the team kind of sit down and do some learning and teaching. So yeah, you can be absolutely a key part of the team as a third year. And so that was probably what I learned over time is that you are making a very good contribution, whether or not it feels like it.
Gosh, so much great advice. I feel like that knowing that will help combat like imposter syndrome and our rising M3s and just med students in general, that like you're a part of the team, you have your place. Like, no, you're not probably as capable as the physician, but you're learning and you can still fill the gaps that the team needs and to make the patient care the best that it can be.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this comes from an internal medicine perspective, but, you know, when I started third year, I thought that, you know, rounds is obviously really important. You want to like nail it on rounds and that's great. But I thought as an early M3 that like the note was also really important. Like, wow, it's, you know, like that is like after rounds are done, like the note is the first priority because, you know, that's what you're attending or your residents or whatever are going to see. And that's kind of some of the work that you're going to be doing is writing these notes. But at least from an internal medicine perspective, the note is like not that important. Like you should be worrying about calling consults, putting in your orders, coordinating their care. The note is, notes don't take care of patients. Consults, orders, patient care, that is taking care of patients. The notes come after that. And so honestly, when I started M3, I started writing my note as early as humanly possible. Now as a late M4, the note comes way after, I don't even start until after rounds. And so, that was something that changed. I think it's different for different fields, but at least for internal medicine, the note, those don't take care of patients, the orders and the consults and things like that do. So.
Yeah. That's a good reminder to just you got into medicine to provide patient, care. And so that you should be in that mindset even as you're training. Yeah. So even as an M3, M4, patient care comes first. And so Absolutely. When you're doing things, does this help the patient? If not, do the things that do and then come back to it.
Yeah.
So now I guess jumping forward to this year, M4 year, what was the biggest difference between, I know COVID kind of messed things up for you guys in terms of AIs and whatnot, but what was the biggest difference between doing your acting internship and being on rotations M3 year?
It's actually a huge difference, much more than I thought it would be. As an M4 on your AI, UC does a great job where AIs truly act as the intern. So as an M3, when you see patients, an intern is always going to also see your patient. You will always be covered by an intern. So that's nice. As an AI, you are the intern. There are not other interns seeing your patients. You are responsible for their care. I mean, really you are. You have supervision from your senior resident and from your attending, but you are providing their care. Your physical exam is going to be the physical exam unless somebody else decides to do one themselves, which often they will or will not, depending on how the patient's doing. Your ideas about where the care should go are going to be seriously considered by your senior resident and by the attending. Your clinical judgment of, you know, a lot of decisions in medicine are not clear cut. You could go either way. Your argument for which way you should go will be compelling to your team. You're putting in orders, you're calling all of the consults, you're really filling the role of the intern. You're carrying the pager often as well. So doing some cross covering. So you see the AI experience is amazing. You really get to step up. And I think at that time, you're going to be ready to do it. It seems totally intimidating probably now as an M2, like in step, but when you're an M4, you're going to be ready to do it. And so really it's a world of difference. And it's also really fun to have M3s on the team with you, because now for the first time ever, you are not the junior most learner. And so you can kind of impart some of your wisdom in terms of like how to navigate Epic and things like that. So being an AI is really fun. It's a lot of hard work. The schedule, honestly, it ends up being about the same as the third year clerkship in terms of days off. You get, you know, 4 days off for the month. It's 4 weeks, but that you don't have to work the last weekend of the rotation. So really, if you look at 4 full weeks, you end up getting 6 days off. So it's really not that bad. It was amazing. I just did another one in April. I did two medicine AIs, and it was really nice to be able to go in and do it again as a late M4 and try to sharpen my skills for residency.
Yeah, it sounds both super exciting and intimidating and scary at the same time. You bring up that the M3s will be around as well. Was that kind of nice connecting with maybe some people you knew, some people you're not, but just like the class below you?
Absolutely. It's so fun. We had like just our M3s when I was on my medicine AI in July were just like so amazing. I still text them. Like they both of them just got inducted into Gold Humanism. So like I like, you know, stay in touch with them and try to convince them to go into internal medicine. so shout out Julie and Abby. But yeah, you know, yeah, it's really fun.
Did you take any like, or what electives did you take? I'm assuming you took electives.
Yeah, you get a lot of elective time as a fourth year. And so I did a few online electives just to build out some extra time off. So I did the online ophthalmology elective, which was great. It's for people who are going into primary care specialties. It's an online only class and it gives you 2 weeks of credit. It was really great. Dr. Kelly did a great job structuring that class. And so I did that during my step two dedicated. It was a nice, actually, ophthalmology review for step two. I remember getting several questions right on step two just because I was in that class. And it was, the schedule was permissive for me to take it during step two studying. I also did the online COVID elective. That allowed me to have the month of March virtual only. And so I went on a little trip to Utah and was able to not have to, you know, have any clinical responsibilities during the match week and the week thereafter. So, you know, there's some good online stuff. I also did 2 full months of research elective, which I highly recommend. So I was able to spend some time, you know, intently working on the research project that I'm a part of. And then, yeah, you know, tons of, they're really fourth year, you can make it exactly what you want it to be. And mine was a good mixture of good clinical experience and very, very chill. So,
yeah, you're describing your fourth year and I'm like, man, that sounds,
it's the promised land. Yeah. It's the promised land.
So before we wrap up, there are just like 2 questions that I kind of want to ask you. What will you miss first? What will you miss most about the podcast in UCOM now that you're leaving us in 2 weeks or a week?
Well, I think I'll start with the podcast. So it's just been such a fun project and working with such amazing people. And now that our team has grown and you and, you know, Mason and Matt, have joined the team, it keeps that like vibrant energy alive, and I the podcast is going to be in good hands. I have no doubt about that. But yeah, I'll miss it. You know, we worked on so many different fun projects and got to explore my interest in medical education through the podcast, so I'm definitely going to miss that outlet. I will not miss having to edit episodes and listen to my own voice. I still hate it. I will not miss that feature. But yeah, it's just been really like probably like the number one experience during med school. So I can't say enough good things about it. In terms of UCOM, I'm going to miss the sense of community here. The sense of it's a really nice place to be a learner, especially in internal medicine. It's an extremely good program for you to be a learner and for you to want to grow. I'll miss all the people that make that the case, and I'll miss the really supportive environment. I would have absolutely been overjoyed to be here for residency as well. So. It's an amazing spot, and honestly, the residents here are amazing, and I'll miss them as well. So,
I'm jumping when I say this, but I'm sure that UCOM and the administration and the people you've interacted loved that you were here as well. I can speak at least for the podcast members, the newbies and Rachel. It's a blast been like getting to know you, and then you and Robbie and Zach, and just, you know, taking us under your wing and being so nice to us.
Well, you are, there's a bright future for the podcast. There's no doubt about that. So,
and you know, like looking forward, what are some things you're looking forward when you become a PGY1?
I really got the sense on this last AI that I was really taking care of my patients. You kind of get that during your first AI, but on this second one, I really tried to really step up and take ownership of my patients. And like, you know, I got a sense of, you know, honestly, for the first time, I found myself taking my work home with me. I would check the Epic kind of like at night, you know, after dinner, just to like check on that important lab. I really felt like I was truly taking care of these patients. And so, I'm really looking forward to just getting better at that and like learning how to do great patient care. I think, you know, that's what it's all about at the end of the day. I think also my program's huge. It's a ton of people. And it's a ton of, you know, amazingly diverse people from different backgrounds. And, I'm just excited to get to know my future co-residents and, you know, have hopefully, you know, hopefully that same amazing community that we have here, that same supportive environment. I'm looking forward to that. And really, I feel like it's time to step up too, you know, once again, to take on more and to do more. So, I'm excited. It's nerve-wracking, but I'm excited.
It just makes me so happy when you say like, you were taking, even though people advise against it, but like taking your work home, you were just so like excited. And like, it seemed like you really felt like, you know, you're a doctor, these are your patients. They're not someone else's patients. Mm-hmm. They're your responsibility. And it just makes me so happy that like, cause you're so passionate about it that you're like, you actually feel there.
Yeah. I really did for the first time. And so, yeah, you know, I think in the future, probably focusing on work-life balance and trying not to take my work home with me is going to be a challenge. So, but when you feel like you are really providing the care, it's so gratifying to do that and to work with your patients. So,
oh, sounds amazing.
You'll get there.
I know. You just gotta jump the step one hurdle, and I'll exactly. Feel more.
Step one is just a quiz. Is just a quiz.
Yeah. Any last bit of advice for any of the medical students about life in general, medical school?
I think, like in terms of being a medical student, I think when you put patients first as your priority and patient care first, the rest just follows really naturally. If you're asking questions to your team because you are interested on how to take care of your patient, then nobody's gonna, you know, people are gonna be excited to teach you because, you know, it's for the patient care and just always focusing on, you know, the patients are why we are here and you know, you are learning along the way, but patient care is like really central to everything. I think when that's your perspective, the rest just flows very naturally from that. I think also I've touched on this a few times already, but just find the work-life balance that truly works for you. It's harder probably, like especially during dedicated and especially as a third year, your schedule is really not up to you, but you still need to find things that give you joy. You still need to have time off, time with, you know, friends or family or spouses, things like that. So I think you have to be intentional to do that. I think you have to arrange for those moments sometimes. And especially like as a resident, I'm going to have to really work hard to create that for myself. But I think it's super important. And then last, I think one of the things that I learned in working on the podcast is it's really hard to do big things alone. You have to work in a group, and you have to be comfortable doing that. And I think once you find a group of people who you really work well with and you're productive with and you have cool and interesting ideas, you just need to give that group of people as much fuel and fire as you can and see where it goes. Because, I mean, this project has gone places I never thought it would. And, you know, we have now two research endeavors, a team of seven people. Like, it's just really, like, beyond what we ever could have imagined at first. And so when you find that group that you work well with, like, run with that, because it's going to be really exciting. So.
Oh, I just got chills from that. And I just loved your advice. It kind of all comes down to intentionality and being intentional with your time, both for your wellness sake and for your patient's sake, and everything you do, and everything else will kind of fall in place if you do that.
Yeah. And, you know, I mentioned this earlier too, Robbie kind of was the lifeblood of this podcast, especially as Zach and I were struggling as third year students to balance the schedule, and you know, his leadership on this project has just been extraordinary, and his you know, his episodes are obviously like the best episodes that we do, so I'm grateful to Robbie for his amazing leadership and effort. Zach obviously brings this wonderful humor to the podcast. He just is such a goofball and somebody that I've really grown close to. And you know, he brings, you know, he does episodes about things that we haven't. He was really the first person to say, like, hey, we're doing all of these curricular episodes, but like, I want to do one about personal finance. Yeah, he was really probably the first person on the team to start branching out and do other topics. And so his vision for kind of expanding that beyond what we were doing was amazing. And yeah, he just brings that energy that he brightens up the room. So, and then I've said this, you know, within the podcast team, but Rachel is like just an angel sent from heaven. Rachel, really, like, I think she sent the email like her first week of M1 saying like, hey, I want to join the podcast. And we sat on that email for months because we were just so busy. But finally we sat down with her and we're just like, all right, cool. She wants to do it. Like, let's like, sure. Why not? And really we had no idea like what we were doing. And, she just coincidentally ended up being like the perfect person to fill that role. She has just, you know, stepped up in such an amazing way. And she, I remember listening to her first episode last year, which was her interview with Madison, and it was just like, okay, Rachel is going to be a goat, like an MVP. And then, yeah, you and Mason and Matt are rising stars and have learned incredibly quickly and are already taking the podcast to a new dimension, new content, new ideas. And so I'm extremely grateful for all of you and extremely excited for, you know, I'm going to be a regular listener as a resident. I'm excited to see where you take it.
And hopefully a guest as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, we could only do all this because of the work you guys put in and what you bring to the team. The topics that you're interested in or I'm interested in inspired me. So like your talk on like patient grief and, or like grieving about patients and kind of more the wellness aspect is exactly what, I'm into. I think it's not talked about a lot. So I just really thoroughly enjoyed your unique perspective on things. So
Thank you.
Thank you for creating this podcast.
Absolutely.
So in honor of wellness, and it's something Rachel and I have picked up from, podcasting with impersonating doctors, is I want to close with, a different type of like question. My question for you is, what is one thing that brought you joy this week?
Yeah, it's a great question, and a great note to end on, I think. I was one of the members of the Gold Humanism Honor Society, and we created this mentoring program last year for the first time, and it's been really fun. I've got a group of students, and they're awesome. And actually, just yesterday, I was able to get the group together in person for the first time. And so got to finally meet all of these amazing individuals and chat with them. And it was just so fun to really, you know, I've met with them over the course of the year, but it's always been on Zoom. And so to get to really see them in person and, you know, have dinner together and stuff was really special. It brought me a lot of joy. And so I would have to go with that.
I love it. I love that people are getting vaccinated, and so now you're able to see them in person.
Exactly.
It brings me so much joy. Okay. Well, that concludes this podcast.
No. I don't want it to stop.
Thank you for sharing your wisdom with me and the rest of the audience who end up listening to this gem of a podcast episode. Sure. And yeah, thank you so much for creating this podcast and everything you do.
Well, thank you for carrying it forward into the future. I can't wait to come back as a resident and get to see and check in with you all. So yeah. Thanks. And I guess, to the, listeners who made it this far, thanks for listening, and I will, see you all later, I suppose.